BBC World Service, and now it's time for Your World. 30 years after the death of Bob Marley, poet Lem Cissé examines his global appeal in One Love, The Legacy of Bob Marley.
Reggae music is a people music, you know. Reggae music is news. Reggae music is news about history. Things that them wouldn't teach in a school. It's just truth, I mean. We don't have nothing but the truth, I mean. That's it. One love, one heart.
Let's get together and feel all right. Reggae music is the people's music. Reggae music is about news, about history. Reggae music is just the truth. That's how Bob Marley described his music in one of the very rare interviews he ever gave. With his strong Jamaican dialect, whether speaking or singing, what's perhaps really amazing, and what we'll be looking at in this programme, is how he has touched all creeds and cultures across the globe. Bob Marley has changed people's lives and perceptions, including my own, and has brought strength and hope to the oppressed through his simple, though powerful, and rebellious message. Get up, stand
up. He did impress me, Bob Marley. It's not just the music, but also the words, also the messages, also the lyrics. This is why it was so popular in Africa. It was so popular in Senegal.
The sound of reggae music had immediate and great appeal in New Zealand because we are islands in the Pacific, and somewhere in the back of our consciousness we are aware of the kind of rolling rhythms of the Pacific and the gentle rhythms of this part of the world in which we are in.
All my life growing up as a Jew, I was sort of kept in this very safe little Jewish box. And I feel that Bob Marley, you know, he really brought the prospect of unity to the table in a place where it seemed impossible.
For me, as a young black boy growing up in an exclusively white environment in northwest England, I had my own road to Damascus through discovering Marley and his music. Shortly after I was born, I was fostered, and then later I was placed in children's homes. In my teens, some hippies on the housing estate nearby introduced me to this Bob Marley. I didn't even know a black person until then. From then on, he became my guide. I was not alone. He was black, like me. I got tired missing my face. Can't get me out of the race. From the Hopi Indians of New Mexico to the Maoris of New Zealand, from Africa to Japan, India to the trench town ghetto in Jamaica where he grew up, Marley's music could be heard booming from speakers in front rooms, shops and clubs. Even when people couldn't understand the words, Marley's powerful voice spoke to them of redemption and revolution. And Marley had something else besides. Esther Anderson, his longtime girlfriend and partner in Island Records, and Chris Salovich, one of Marley's first biographers, both experienced Marley's extraordinary physical presence. I wanna
love you. You kind of feel him by your side as though he's someone who's close to you. You can feel that this person has had a hard time, but he's come through it. So you can feel his strength, but people also feel his warmth, they feel his perception, they feel his suffering. And I think all those qualities just resonate with people all over the world.
First of all, he is beautiful to be photographed, to look at. The camera loves him. He loved the camera. He was an Aquarian, very extroverted, full of opinions and stuff. He definitely had a personality, and that's why those other boys would have been drawn to him to come together for them to do things together.
When reggae first emerged from Jamaica in the 1960s, it was Bob Marley and the Wailers that swiftly became one of its most recognised practitioners. Their very first single, Simmer Down, released in 1963, was top of the Jamaican charts for 2 months. Initially, many thought it was a simplistic music, good music to dance to, but not much more.
When I first heard Marley, I was not into it. It was too repetitive and simplistic sounding music. I was a real jazz head, and it just didn't make any sense to me.
Professor Matt Jensen of Berklee College of Music in Boston, USA.
I don't know what happened. Something just attacks, and I found myself laid out, splayed out on the floor, going, wow, what did I miss before?
Since that epiphany, 20 years ago, Matt Jensen has been teaching a class in the music and life of Bob Marley. In his own words, he's a Bob obsessive and performs concerts of Marley's music with his band, the Bob Marley Ensemble. His students are international, from all corners of the globe. These are young people. Some were not even born when Bob Marley was on Earth.
Most of the students, by the time they come out of the class, sort of their bell is rung. Wow, it's a, I didn't know that this lyric meant this, and it was so deep. You know, I just thought Marley was this cool-looking dude with dreadlocks and plays hippie music from the islands that you can chill out to. And they come out of the class, some of them quite moved. Bob Marley's message was very much about getting free from a system that enslaves so many people.
Until the philosophy which owed one race superior and another.
And I think Marley's music is a serious cry and sometimes very angry cry out against that kind of inequality. It's like Marley's music breaks the spell of the lies that we are told by the ruling classes as to what the meaning of life is. I mean, the message that's out there and has been out there for decades, if not centuries, is that life is only about making a profit at the expense of others, that there isn't enough to go around, and that some people have to be poor. It's a terrible spell, and I think that Marley's music opens a porthole to go into another world where we're free from all of this. I mean, a real true freedom. When you put on the music, you know, you feel no pain. I mean, that's one of Marley's lyrics.
One good thing about music, when it is
from the northern hemisphere of America to the southern hemisphere of New Zealand. For the Maoris, who almost had their identity and their land ripped away from them by the 18th century British colonisers, the music of Marley hit a profound chord.
This morning, I woke up in a curfew.
The Maoris were very much the underclass of New Zealand till they rebelled in the mid-19th century, and a series of wars broke out which culminated in the Treaty of Waitangi, ostensibly giving them equal rights. Yet they still felt disenfranchised, and in the 1970s, the Maori movement gained a head of steam. They began to insist that the terms of the treaty be honoured. And here's the significance, says Graham Reed, a music journalist in New Zealand and long-time Bob Marley fan.
The Treaty of Waitangi was an accord which was signed between the Crown and Maori people, and it was signed in 1840. And just by sheer coincidence, it happened to be signed on Bob Marley's birthday, February the 6th. So in this country, by the 90s and into the 2000s, the Waitangi Day commemorations were very fraught affairs, and there was often a lot of antagonism at Waitangi. And a lot of people felt that they didn't want to go and participate in that. And so Bob Marley's birthday became this kind of celebratory day. And the reason it became a celebratory day is because of not only just the friction at Waitangi, the coincidence of his birthday, but also Bob Marley was speaking to people with his message of get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And that particularly appealed to all these disenfranchised groups in society, people who didn't feel they were part of the social or political process, had been ignored by government successively, all of whom found something deep and meaningful in Bob Marley's message. And he performed here.
It's as if the soul of Bob Marley and his music were an unstoppable force. In 1980, a year after he performed in New Zealand to rapturous crowds, he was invited to perform in Africa at Zimbabwe's independence ceremony. Marley developed a deep love of Africa, becoming a pan-African freedom fighter. His songs reflected his passion. He then embarked on what turned out to be his last tour, which attracted the largest audiences at that time for any musical act in Europe. A year later, he was dead. But long before that, he had come to the attention of a young, up-and-coming African musician, the now famous Baba Mal from Senegal. While initially he couldn't understand the lyrics, Baba was drawn by something much deeper and strangely familiar.
I first did get in touch with the music of Bob Marley around 1978. But first, I couldn't figure it was coming from Jamaica. For me, it was somewhere in Africa this music is coming from. No woman cry. And then we'll start to learn a little bit more about reggae music, about Jamaica, about the story of Jamaican people. Woman cry. When I went back to Senegal, I was traveling all over West Africa. And we went to a village called Bundu, Goudiri, and most of the people who live in this village are griots, musicians from centuries ago, families of musicians. And we play music with them every day, every night. And this is when I discovered that it was really similar to many ways to the music of Bob Marley, the structure of the music, like I say, but also the importance of the lyrics, of the words, the role of a person in his society to try to make it a better life, to fight for justice. And this is what I discovered also in the music of Bob Marley. Stolen from Africa, brought to America. So I was telling, this music must be the one that did travel a long time ago, and maybe it was coming by with someone like Bob Marley or Jimmy Cliff or the others. Maybe this is the source of reggae music. And I think later on this is why it was so popular in Africa. Africa, unite, 'cause we're moving right out of Babylon. I was telling to myself, maybe he is concerned about what I'm concerned too. The African people have to have a better life on earth. I was saying to myself, that's the connection. We need to have a connection with all those Africans who come from the diaspora, like Bob Marley, who can make the connection. That's the link you should try to find.
A link and a connection that I myself found about 15 years ago. When I left the children's homes, I began the lifelong search for my family. It turned out they were Ethiopian and Eritrean. At 29 years old in 1995, at long last, I found my father, a pilot for Ethiopian Airlines. But it was too late. He died in 1974. But that Ethiopian connection to my father, to Haile Selassie, through Bob Marley, gave me an even greater bond with the words and music. I even grew dreadlocks, a statement of rebellion. For Bob Marley, they were a statement of his religion, Rastafari.
Well, I've been a Rasta from ever since. Because what is what is. From beginning to the end, it can never change. So we're just Rasta from creation, you know.
Well, in fact, it was in 1966, following a visit by the Emperor Haile Selassie to Jamaica, that Rastafarianism really took off in Jamaica and took hold of Bob Marley. His songs became littered with references to the Lion of Zion, Judah and Babylon, all of which began to have an effect in another part of the world and on another religion. Monica Hayam, who lives in Israel, has spent the past few years making a film called Awake Zion about the link she perceives between Rasta, reggae and Judaism and a search for identity. In Bob Marley's music, she found a profound message. Zion train is coming our way.
First and foremost, it had to do with the visceral power of the music. But as I started going into the culture of the music and looking at the album covers and looking at the lyrics and understanding what Bob and other like him were talking about, I realized that this culture of music was loaded with symbolism and lore and mythology that was oddly familiar to me from my own Jewish upbringing. But with reggae, it was even farther than that for me, because not only was I interested in understanding the social context of the music, but I was interested in understanding why in that social context there were things that felt oddly close to home. There were so many little things that cropped up from a biblical, historical, mythological perspective to a ritualistic day-to-day practice perspective to even just this very close kinship of paralleled lives and exile and redemption and slavery.
All pirates, yes, they rabbi.
A history of oppression and all of these subjects that are shared by these two groups of people.
Minutes after day took I.
I mean, the first thing that came into my mind was the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and, you know, other such stories. It's basically a story of uprisers, you know, of rebels, of people who took matters into their own hands by any means necessary and made something of their culture and made something of themselves. So I think that message of rebellion and uprising and get up and stand up resonates with Jews in a very profound way in light of our troubled and turmoiled history and all the things that we have had to do to kind of keep ourselves alive and well.
Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
In searching for my family, I was making something of myself. And it is through my troubled and turmoiled past that I discovered who my father was, a pilot for Ethiopian Airlines. There's a photograph I have of him in grainy black and white. And on his finger, there is a ring. You can clearly see the black onyx square inlaid with the golden lion upholding the Ethiopian flag. It's the exact same ring Bob Marley wore. Both were given to their wearers by the Emperor Haile Selassie. What are the odds on that? Bob Marley's story of suffering and struggle was my story of suffering and struggle, and his story of redemption was mine. But to have seen that ring on my late father's finger assured me that in the tradition of the African griot, Marley had a power beyond his physical presence. But there is another more prosaic reason that Esther Anderson believes is key to Bob Marley's initial success and appeal, his own parentage.
One of the things that got people to come to react to the Wailers is that we could use Bob's father, this white English man. And once you said that Bob's father was a white man, everybody came. All the journalists came. The white ones came, but a lot of them came also to hear about Rastafari. And once we put the Rasta thing together, the red, green and gold, all of it together, then they had a hook. All journalists need a hook. What kind of bag you put the person in? And unless they had a bag to put you in, they couldn't do nothing with you.
And as well as being able to sell Marley, put him in a bag, there was something different. Something mystical, perhaps.
You did feel a certain trembling of his aura around him. You could almost see it, you know, and you could feel something. And I'd heard of people saying sometimes Bob Marley came near, you would back off. Just the kind of solidity of his certainty within himself. You know, it's like you feel when you're around shamanic type people.
There's a natural mystic blowing through the air.
But I think he'd have laughed at you if you'd called him that.
He definitely had an incredible presence, because I felt that when he walked in the room. Now is how much myth and whatever you want to build around it. We can develop anybody into the so-called superstar because we live in a celebrity culture mentality. So I don't think that Bob would have liked people to be calling him any prophet or any myth or something.
Bob Marley's other gift was that he would read people's palms as a young, really, he's 3-4 years old. Clearly he was psychic. And when he came back from Kingston, someone asked him to read their palm, and he said, no, I'm not reading palms anymore, I'm singing songs now. So I think, you know, that kind of psychic element within him also came out in his music and is also part of the reason why people love his work so much, because it touches something within them, deep within them.
He was a very natural person. He would not have liked people to be saying, oh, he could read fortunes. And so, if he could read fortune, why didn't he know he was going to damn die of cancer and stop messing about with football? He'd already had the cancer on the toe. He got sorted out, and then he went back and continued with the football rubbish when he's supposed to be a musician. Eh? So how much vision can he have? So I don't buy into any of that, and I'm not taken with any of this aura business.
Nevertheless, the world was open to receive the spirit, the aura business of Bob Marley, like Matt Jensen.
Marley was said to be a prophet, and he himself said that he didn't write the music, that Jah wrote the music. You know, higher forces out there were working through him. He was just a conduit. I believe it really was that way.
And Barbara Mal also perceived something that was more than human in the way that Marley performed.
Bob Marley, he is the man. I think he has something more than the music, something that even maybe him, he can't explain. It's like when we start to sing in some traditional parties in Africa, you don't feel that you own the power of holding the song. It just have to be given by something else to you all the way through your performing. And that's something more than just a human being, maybe. This is what I saw on him, and I was completely convinced that this is the man, this is a messenger, because a messenger have to go with his weapon, musical weapon, and to talk. And to talk to people. And this is what I think people get from Bob Marley, the feeling that it's just a human being who was seeing the past, now, the future, where it should be heading. And just was telling what he had to say to people at that moment. And this is what people are always looking for the truth.
With all this, we're trying to put it into words, but at a certain point, the words don't do justice. You just got to put the music on, turn it up, and just sit back and let it bring out in you what we already know. You know, Marley would say that. It's like, you have the answer. We have the answers to solve pretty much all the problems that we have. It's a visceral, physical, multi-layered dance that he brings to so many people and to myself and my students. And thank God, or thank Jah, for Bob Marley, you know?
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind.
Bob Marley, the man who meant so many different things to so many different people. The poet, the visionary, the musician, and the rebel.
All I have is my life. A rebel, man. A revolutionary. See? Yes. Rasta is the future.
Redemption songs. These songs of freedom. Songs of freedom.
One Love, The Legacy of Bob Marley, was presented by Lem Cisse. It was a Whistledown production for the BBC World Service.